come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, friends and neighbors, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast, which happens every Saturday night, whether you're ready for it or not. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, TuneIn Radio, Castroller, everywhere.
YouTuber.
And YouTube, that's right. What? We're on YouTube now.
We're on YouTube now.
Is it just a black screen with audio?
Oh, no,
we have graphic. Really awesome edited photos.
So that's where you can find us. Every Saturday, we're we watch a movie, and then we talk about it for your listening pleasure and enjoyment. So the Saturday Night Freak Show regulars starting lineup is
Sean,
Holly,
Travis,
and I'm Colin. And tonight we watched
The Last Dragon,
chosen by
Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
Barry Gordy,
chosen by Holly.
And me.
There you go. So who directed this movie and what year was it made?
1985, directed by Michael Schultz.
Do we know if he's done anything else?
You know him from some various blaxploitation films from the 70s, starring Richard Pryor.
Majestic? No, that's Charles. What was the one with Richard Pryor in it? Can't remember now.
He did a few of them. He also did a movie called Disorderlies.
Mm. You may have seen. He did Disorderlies?
He did Disorderlies.
Boy. With the, what were they called? The Fat?
The Fat Boys.
The Fat Boys.
Are they a rap?
Yeah, they were like a rap group.
Yeah.
But
they ran around being disorderly.
But he's still directing. He directs like every popular show right now. He's guest directed at some point.
Oh, so he's a big TV director.
He's still doing good.
All right. Yeah. Who's Barry Gordy?
Barry Gordy
runs Motown.
Founder and head producer of Motown Records. Yes.
And Motown will know from such major acts
good
as
music from.
Well, it's got to be like Diana Ross.
Diana Ross.
It's like Stevie Wonder.
Smokey Robinson, yeah. Stevie Wonder.
Michael
the
Temptations.
Early Jackson 5. Michael Jackson did leave eventually, but Jackson 5.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Barry Gordy. That's why you put his name first. That's
Barry
why.
Gordy.
Holy shit.
So at some point in the 1980s, 1985, I guess, Barry Gordy gets it up his butt that he wants to make a movie because that's what all the kids are spending their money on.
From what I understand, it's because
then they'll buy more music.
Motown was not doing so well in the 80s.
Yeah.
So he thought he'd try his hand at movies.
Well, because we heard the soundtrack to this movie, and now we understand why.
Well, when was Purple Rain made?
84.
84? I'm just wondering.
Prince
just because if it's no, I don't think Prince is, but you know, just the idea of like, holy shit, Prince did it. Let's make a movie. We'll get Prince's protege. Well, Vanity.
She's a very, very fine.
Very superheroic names, all of Prince's proteges.
Yeah, because what? Apollonia, did we say it was? And Sheila E. And would you say Carmen Electra?
Carmen Electra was one. Not like, I don't think she didn't marry her or nothing like that.
No,
but she was
one
of
his thing, yeah.
Then he's like, I don't know, gave up on her or something like that.
She's
like,
everybody did at one point.
Well, because we prove in this movie that, like, are they talented? Like, this
Vanity
girl,
was a very fine-looking woman.
What she was very, say? And her acting wasn't too horrible.
Star of action,
the fucking
Jackson.
Singing.
She better look a lot.
Is god awful her singing, but we'll get around to that because the story of Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon is, of course, a homage to the Kung Fu 42nd Street blaxploitation kind of.
They actually filmed that scene in the
theater
Victory.
Scene.
Yeah, that's a
42nd Street,
Grindhouse.
So that's something we've been doing this month is watching movies that kind of talk about that lifestyle and also shoot and show images of that sort of movie theater going experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you also get a just a straight up. I mean, it's like a mix of Fists of Fury, a little bit of Enter the Dragon, I guess. I don't know how many other like straight up pulls they use from other Bruce Lee movies. I'm not a big Bruce Lee movie. Like, I love Enter the Dragon, which so does this movie.
It's true.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, they
half
go
of this
so
movie
far
is like just
to
show how awesome Enter the Dragon is.
You see many clips from Enter the Dragon in this
movie. Well, you guys might like to know that the inspiration for this movie was the guy who wrote it, who is Louis Venosta. He did a lot of work on Broadway, and him and his girlfriend went to what?
Well, you could see it in the movie.
It's true. He took his girlfriend to see a showing of Enter the Dragon. It was the 10-year anniversary of Bruce Lee's death. So they went to Times Square to see Enter the Dragon. And the scene in the movie, when it's like the bikers and it's like the transvestites and like all the different gangs of New York or whatever.
In the movie, The Last Dragon, not Enter the Dragon.
Right. In the movie, The Last Dragon. Okay. In the movie, The Last Dragon.
Like, what like, the fuck was this? Yeah.
Enter the Dragon. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember one transvestite. Like, get him, baby.
Yeah.
That was great.
That was crazy.
I laughed out loud that on that scene, one.
It's like, don't get his face or something like that.
That scene, that was like what they walked into when they went to Times Square to see Bruce Lee's actual movie, Enter the Dragon. They walked in, they saw all these people in costume fighting, like mock fighting in the aisles and everything. And he looks
at a dance breakout.
He looks at his girlfriend and he's like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And she's like, I'm seeing it. And he's like,
damn, baby, no, you should make a movie.
He's like, this is Broadway. She goes, are you stupid? This is a movie. And that's how this movie was created. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can kind of, what is the fascination between like, I mean, like urban black what it, audiences
what it
and,
is,
and kung fu
yeah. What it is, you know, when these kung fu movies were coming out, you know, back in the, what, early 70s? 60s or
late 60s?
Late 60s?
Through the 70s.
Chinese people were very kind of, you know, they were looked down upon or whatever. They're dishwashers. They were, you know, they were kind of the subjugated minority or whatever, or at least the focus of the movies are that. So when black audiences saw that, they related to the characters, right? Oh, we come to America, all we are is dishwashers and janitors and shit. And but, you know, but then we also have this cool other life. It's almost like a low income like superhero story, right? Like, oh, we're so fucking put down, but then we go in the back alley and have these fucking mythical fights and shit like that, you know. But they just really resonated with that message of, you know, so many movies of Bruce Lee movies are about racism against Chinese people or Chinese people that betray the Eastern philosophy and they westernize themselves and shit like that.
They bring in the cocaine or the whatever, heroin, and you got to put them down or whatever.
Or just whatever. They bring in the Western capitalism and shit like that. So, yeah. So it comes from there. And then this is their like rendition of it. This is their like,
yeah, it is the mix of, I mean, it's just weird, you know, it's odd when you're watching it because it is like, you know, it is the black martial arts movie, right? I mean,
you look at that into
some of the black exploitation movies, you know, there's some karate here and there, but never like a full on.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, well, I guess we'll get into the plot, right? I mean, the plot of it is it starts out in a dojo where this kid is learning the way of the, I was going to say,
Bruce
the way
Leroy
of the ninja.
Green.
Yeah. Bruce Leroy Green learning from his Asian master how to be like the seventh level
ultimate
fighter or whatever the hell. And I mean, so it's basically following the same kind of path as like a lot of these exploitation movies where you come from the dojo, then you go out to the world. There's some kind of, you know, corrupted evil force that, you know,
but that's what you have to fight
in order to overcome and prove yourself.
I would say that's what it mixes with the blaxploitation, right? And that's like, in a weird way, I think that's the problem with this movie. Because I would say most martial arts movies are about you're a dude either trying to learn or you're a dude that's like given up. And then you have to find a sensei that teaches you to be awesome. That way most of the portion of your movie is training and shit like that. And then the master gets betrayed somehow or killed. And then the dude like avenges his dojo. Mm. So this movie is like, well, I've got a master. And it's like, well, the guy's like, you're done. I've shot all these arrows at you. And you know, you picked out the
very, very
one.
Dangerous training sequence.
Which was real. That was real.
Took him two hours to shoot that. But he actually shot an arrow in half in midair.
Starring Ty Mack, who was a 19-year-old black belt. And we're not sure. Is he from South America? Because for some reason, he speaks like he's Chinese in this movie. And we're like, they don't explain this.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that's the actor. Because the actor, it just says he was born in New York, I believe. He had a black parent and an Italian parent or something like that. But
and hadn't acted a day in his life until he got this movie.
Right, he learned on the job because he was a martial arts phenom.
The guy that they wanted for this movie was Billy Blanks.
Yeah,
the creator of Tai Bo. Yeah. And then at the last minute, they're like, let's give this time
that
guy.
He probably couldn't act Chinese. And they're like, he's somewhere like a fucking alien.
They said this guy had like the innocence they wanted to project.
Yeah.
So they went with him.
In a weird way, I think maybe that's an issue. But I don't know.
Well,
maybe.
His thing that we set up at the beginning in the dojo, which I thought was kind of a metaphor at the beginning, but it turned out in the movie that it wasn't. He is in pursuit of the glow.
Yes.
Which is some kind of force that you achieve once you hit like the mystical.
I thought I would see a glow.
My body will be enveloped in a glow. Yeah. I'm like, okay, they're just talking like, right?
No.
But we'll get to that.
Right. They'll add an extra light behind him when he gets to that level and he'll be good.
Because it's the 80s.
But
damn it.
I did like that they mentioned the whole, the idea that, you know, what proved that he's done with his training is the fact that you're reacting without thinking, because they call that the monkey's paw.
You know without knowing.
Knowing. Because he's able to catch the blue arrow.
How did you know it was the blue arrow?
I don't know.
It's like, you're done. That's it. It's over. Training's over. But the kid's like, I can't live with, you know, because the master is just like, that's it. I'm going to see my sister in Miami. I'm done being your training you. It's like, well, what can I do? So the master sends him on a mission to go find a very wise man named
Sum Dung Goy. Yeah, Sum Dung Goy.
A very wise man who lives in New York, because everybody in New York comes to New York at some point. So that becomes, I was going to say Timac, but Bruce Leroy's mission, basically.
And he has the medallion that was given to him by Bruce Lee.
Yeah, and he's to present this medallion to Sum Dung Goy once he finds
him. Now, earlier we were talking about, like, why does this guy sound so fucking alien? I'm thinking he's been in a dojo his whole life. That he didn't only learn martial arts from the guy. He learned to talk from the sensei, you know, because there's no other reason why he's like, well, hello. I do not know why, you know, talking to people on the...
Yeah, was that something they told him to do for this movie?
It has to be. The lines were written there.
Like, he's such a Bruce Lee head that... Yeah. He's like the Beavis and Butthead kids of the night, you know. People like, you know, the people that just start talking like that forever. He just did it with Bruce Lee. Or he talked watching Bruce Lee movie, learning... He learned to talk watching Bruce Lee.
It's really weird when you watch it, because like the next scene is, you know, the guy goes out into the streets of New York and he's wearing the karate pajamas and the big Chinese sombrero. I know that's not the what
karate sombrero. Pajamas. Karate pajamas and a big Chinese sombrero. Dear Lord.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
have names. But I don't know them, but they have
but
names.
I'm surprised he didn't have like the round glasses and buck teeth.
Oh,
I'm just saying, like,
but it plays like the subsequent movie seriously does to give you a flavor of what this movie is. It plays as if he is a fucking alien from the planet
and he's
Dojo.
Never been on Earth,
right?
Yeah, he's never been outside,
even though he's grew up in Harlem
and he's trying to blend in with like this family. So, because that doesn't feel like his family, it feels like that's
why
he's been, you know, set up with these people.
Yeah,
I wish that scene was just earlier in the movie, because it would have just, because I mean, in the beginning of the fucking movie, it's like, okay, we already did all that shit, and then we go to it's a music video show that's being taped in New York with this
Seventh Heaven
with
it's
this.
It's like American
Bandstand. It's like
Band
American Bandstand.
Yeah. Laura Charles Hot Picks,
played by Vanity.
Vanity,
a protege of Prince.
Who not only plays the hit song by DeBarge, Rhythm of the Night.
Listen to the rhythm of the night, listen to the morning light.
Yeah, when you watch that, like, man, that guy, I guess he was going off of the Michael Jackson, like, popularity.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he's got the pencil-thin mustache, and
very,
he sounds
very
like a girl.
Thin black man with very beautiful hair.
Yeah. But Vanity not only hosts this program, but she also sings.
She performs.
It's like the Monster Mash, dude.
It felt like it.
It's weird.
I thought black people could dance. What is this?
Is she hissing at me? What's going on?
It's crazy. It's like, what the fuck is? I can't even think of the song. Like, no. It's like, is there
horrible.
Is there even a vocal rhythm? It's just. I remember a lot of like. And a lot of, and the, her just making a lot of big-eyed, like, monster
big
gestures.
Big eyes and robotic movements. It was very weird.
At a certain point, it went to a wide shot of her just alone on the stage. I'm like, this is getting weird.
Yeah,
but then we find out about a short midget mobster guy named Arcadia.
Eddie Arcadia.
That wants the video game king.
Yeah.
Last name Arcadia.
Well, he made in the movie.
That's writing.
He makes like video jukeboxes, which I was like, holy fuck, that was a thing. That's amazing.
Brilliant.
We need video jukeboxes. That's great.
Yeah. Well,
but so he's like trying to get his girlfriend. He's like pushing his girlfriend.
Who's like a Madonna.
I thought of her more like a Cyndi Lauper.
Her style is mocking Cyndi Lauper.
I didn't know. Is that Barry Gordy like ripping on Cyndi Lauper?
Probably.
I don't know. I don't have anything to prove.
Let's say yes, because
I'm
going to
say yes because I like to judge people.
Yeah. Who's going to correct us?
But then, so they're going to kidnap her to make her play the video, which I think
they're going to kidnap Vanity.
Not her girl. She's part of the deal. Well, she's kind of part of the deal. She's like the most fleshed out character in the whole movie, is the ditzy girlfriend.
She is.
She's awesome.
She's got that one scene where I was just like.
Exactly. We'll get to that. And so, then Bruce Leroy, of course, stops it and does his martial arts. And he loses his medallion. She picks it up, just like Ninja Turtles in the 90s. Like, that's the martial arts train. They forgot a sigh or a... But then we get to the family. I'm like, holy fuck. Oh, we even introduce his brother, and we don't even know it's his brother.
Right, yeah.
Because we just see this, like, young black kid. It's like, okay, we're focusing on this kid now for some reason, and he's going to date her. And But then we have the family scene. Where he's meditating on the roof and the kid's explaining what a freak. I was like, fuck, this needed to come. Like, he could have even rescued her, but I don't know. We just needed that scene a little earlier because we had the movie theater scene, we had the meeting her, the pop star lady or the video DJ, VJ, whatever, at Seventh Heaven, rescuing her.
Yeah.
Introduced before we got the who these people are.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Keisha Knight Pulliam should have been moved up.
His family owns a pizzeria.
Idea that this guy's a fucking alien. Like, I mean, it really did feel like he was, you know, somehow. Like, I thought
he just doesn't deal with his
that
family.
He
somehow
had,
alone
had been set up with this dojo, and God knows where the hell he
like
was
he lived
staying.
In a back room, in the dojo,
right?
Kind of
yeah,
felt like,
and then
was raised
finally
by this guy.
Turned loose on New York, and I thought maybe this was coming back to like, or maybe he was put up by like a kid, a neighborhood kid, or something like that. He just lived there, but no, it's like it's his actual family.
It's his mom,
even
dad.
Though he doesn't speak English like a human being. He talks like some kind of, like he's been watching, I guess, a bunch of karate movies.
See, I think it makes total sense. I think it the whole point was to show how he was so immersed in this culture that he was completely removed from the rest of his family.
Yeah. Well, I get that.
So immersed that he was eating popcorn with chopsticks.
Like, okay, I'm not going to get into specifics, but my brother loves pirate movies, and he starts to talk a little bit about a pirate, and nobody accepts it. So just the fact that all these people are just like, Bruce Leroy. But then again, I'm sorry.
Leave your brother alone.
In the movie theater, we prove that this is like this cool subsection of Harlem that they love martial arts movies so much that, I mean, they're all, there's little martial arts.
Like if they all walked out of Harlem, everyone would be like, what the fuck are you wearing? Like, it's only recognized within that little section.
And that's what I'm saying. 80s, like New York in the 1980s must have been the most glorious fucking place to live because there's so many, like,
you could dress
weird,
like a freak.
Yeah.
Everybody dressed like the Legion of Doom
did.
And be fine.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Okay. Then, in the movie theater, even before all this shit, we're introduced to the kind of the villain.
Shogun of New York.
Shogun of Harlem. Shogun, dude. Who's the master?
Shona.
Who's the master?
This Shona. Guy, we gotta fucking talk about.
He's one of the greatest cinematic
he's very
characters Shona. Ever envisioned.
He's very tall.
Played by Julius Carey.
Julius Carey.
Has he done anything?
Julius J. Carey the third.
He's done cameos in pretty much every TV show
but
since
but never
the 70s.
Achieved like a peak. That, you
he
know,
was
that,
mostly
no,
known.
No, he achieved. Did you not watch the movie?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. This
dude, he is
this
achievement
is an achievement.
Unlocked.
I know, that's what
it.
You're saying. Like, the fucking girlfriend's the most fleshed out character.
Well,
I don't
yeah.
know if he's fleshed out, but he is the dominant personality.
Oh, because he's so crazy.
Movie.
He's so crazy.
Oh, yeah. That guy's giving it his all.
His villains look crazy. Well, he's I
he's
mean,
got
yeah,
sunglasses
he's just,
with the Chinese flag painted in the middle.
Oh yeah, and the well, no, that's the Japanese. The
Rising
Sun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah,
yeah. But he basically comes into the theater.
But he's got like, the slits in the... He's got
the 80s glasses.
But he comes into the theater and interrupts a perfectly good screening of Enter the Dragon by challenging with his crew, with of course. Posse. And there's the girl who looks like Cyndi Lauper with the fucking hair. But yeah, these guys are all...
She's just butch-ass white thug woman.
And they come in and basically have to challenge Leroy to a duel. Why? Because Leroy has the... It's like... Who's this Leroy? I hear Leroy's back, and like Leroy can catch bullets with his teeth. Blah blah blah. I gotta fight
like,
you.
I did like that scene though. That's one of those things where it's like, okay, there's like a myth around Bruce Leroy, you know, or Leroy Green is his real name, but they call him Bruce
He's
Leroy.
He's like a legend.
And I kind of wish, like, that's why I, kinda, in a way, I don't like this character because the character is played off as being very passive, right? Well, it's like, well, then how does he have a reputation of catching bullets in his teeth?
Because he's that weird guy. The weird guy always has rumors made up about him.
Well, but it's...
That's...
But we find out it's true, so that means it has to come from, like... that's what I'm saying. I just think, like... You know, because most martial arts movies are about, like, yeah, you have my training, but, well, maybe samurai movies are more about the a village is in trouble.
Yeah, at some point, he has done something that
That's what I thought. At some point in time, maybe there was other gangs, you know.
Well,
he does
run his own dojo. They've seen what he can do there.
That's like so the Fist of Fury parts I'm talking about.
Is that what he does after he leaves his dojo? He starts his
dojo?
Starts
his
dojo,
right? Well,
he's teaching these kids at one point.
And you dress like Bruce Lee from Game of Death.
Yeah.
The yellow one piece.
Right. Yeah. That came out just like, huh?
Well, we get it. He's a very big fan of Bruce Lee.
I don't dress like Superman. I'm just saying.
That we know of.
You like this movie? Because basically it is a superhero story. Come on. He's in disguise. No. He's living with his family.
He's not in disguise at all.
He has a superhero.
He dresses like a Chinese guy. He's a black guy.
He helps like poor women being assaulted in the streets of New York. Because that's what I totally felt that. Like, he was like, ma'am, are you okay? I'm like, it's fucking Superman moment right there.
That's not, I don't know.
He just fucking chops
Saki aggressive. All these guys. Superman's aggressive. That's why I don't like this character. He's too passive. Even Bruce Lee.
He's very Clark.
Even Bruce Lee said that fighting is expressing yourself physically. You know, I mean, he didn't think of it as evil, but it's not this whole, the passive lifestyle shit. Yeah, that's philosophy, but that's not martial arts necessarily. Mm. That's what martial arts became to, like, suburban white kids, you know, because they're like, you know, offense. They want kids to study in school but not use the karate chopping, you know. So they fill in this bullshit about peacefulness. But Bruce Lee's like, no, I mean, fucking Bruce Lee ran away from America because he fucking, like, fought kids and got in trouble and was going to get arrested and shit. Mm. Yeah, he was not necessarily an exile, but he got, you know, he ran away so the authorities wouldn't catch him for, like, busting people's fucking noses up and shit, you know. So I think that's my problem with the character is he's too passive for...
I felt that because there was so many times, I guess, Shonuff comes to his dojo and challenges him there in front of all of his students.
On his turf.
That's what I was like, that's why I'm like, this is Fist of Fury, right? This is the dojo, gets threatened, you know, that's Fist of Fury.
That's kind of part of the story, though. He's trying to fight... Sure. He doesn't understand the balance of... the Zen culture and the martial arts culture. When he finds the perfect harmony, that's when he becomes the master. Maybe. That's the reason.
That's when he becomes the last dragon.
The last dragon. That's right.
Maybe, but the movie doesn't really say it like that. I get it after like multiple viewing. You can totally like
you're spelled out,
you're,
Travis.
No, you're writing the novelization, and I totally appreciate it. You know, just like I mean. Okay, the main villain of this, like, my problem with
Wait, Shonuff?
The main villain is Arcadia.
Yeah.
Well, I love his over-the-topness.
I like his over-the-topness, but I've got a problem with, and this happens in other movies, like Jim Carrey's The Mask. It's not called Jim Carrey's The Mask, but you know what I mean.
Just The Mask.
But the idea, I get it, you want your, especially in a blaxploitation movie, you want your villain to be
white.
Okay, not necessarily white. Yeah, definitely white. They have to be white. Why? Black people don't make problems for their own communities. But you want him to be weaselly, and you want him to be pretty much like more of a, like, they can't necessarily produce what they, you know, they're more talk than whatever. But at the same time, when you're watching a movie, it creates a non-threatening villain, right? you're creating a guy that's like, well, he's just this weaselly fuckhole, and like he's not threatening at all, well, and he's supposed to be the villain. Especially because it's an
action movie where the hero it has like, you know, this physical ability, like he's a physical. Fighter.
Yeah, so if you
so you put him up against, you have to put him up against a guy who's, you know, intelligent. Or you have like the Weasley guy who's got money and is able to pull this stuff
and
off.
And I guess Show Enough is supposed like to fill in the aggressive role, but he's almost not enough in this movie. Show Enough is not in this movie enough.
Well, I don't know. Like it maximizes his appearances.
But, but he's really not part of the story. You know, Show Enough it has nothing to do with the whole Arcadia wants to kidnap the video DJ to bring his girlfriend. Show Enough is just this dude in the neighborhood that wants to fucking challenge Bruce Leroy so he could be the best in the neighborhood despite all these myths about Bruce Leroy.
Bruce Leroy.
That's what it sounds like.
Leroy.
And, but yeah, we were talking about how the girlfriend's the most fleshed out. Yeah, I thought the girlfriend.
That scene is like really great.
It's a great scene where she's surprised like,
that
like
it got that deep with her.
What scene?
The girlfriend where she's just like, you know what? I think you're using me the same way you use Rocky.
Yeah.
Like if it's my tits or whatever, then you're using.
And for
them
the next 5 minutes, she's like nailing on the head. It's just like this is great.
And who's that? She's a good TV actress.
She was in Spin City.
How was she?
Yeah.
She's in a bunch of shit. She's such, I mean, she is the best actress of the whole movie.
True.
Or the best actor.
And later on, when they're watching, when Eddie Arcadia has taken over the studio from Laura Charles, when they show a music video, that's her, right?
No.
That's
some other lady.
It looks Darlene? Just like her.
And she's just an older lady.
Really? It looks just like her.
I know, that's what I was like. He was watching her videos, right? But it's,
right, like
it's
an actually good video from her.
Because that was fire.
But she's amazing, though.
Because that guy liked her.
But no, that scene
the, the thug of Arcadia is the dude that was the thug in Dumb and Dumber. It's like, that guy is always just a fucking dumbass thug.
Dumb thug.
Mike Starr.
Mike Starr.
He did it really well.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely dumb and cartoony in this. Like, that's another problem. Like, I don't know. This movie has weird tonal issues with me. I was like, I like.
There's the very broad piranha joke.
Oh, you got to have the piranha. Which it never played out again. Like, we thought it was going to, but it never.
There's a fight
came
scene
back.
That takes place, like, right in front. So, the bad guy, of course, has in his palace, it's surrounded by all these video arcade or video jukeboxes, has a tank of water that's full of piranha.
We apparently, assume, we never they don't even say.
Yeah, you just dunk a turkey leg in there and it
comes out
with
a bone.
Yeah, like a pig leg.
Not good
joke. There's a fight that takes place because eventually, you know, like Arcadia kidnaps Vanity. And so, you know, Bruce Leroy has to go rescue her, goes
just
to the apartment, fights like five dudes. And you're like, and they have prominently featured in the shot. The fucking tank. And you're like, at some point, someone's going to get kicked in that fucking tank.
They didn't even say something like, drown, like, I'm going to drown you until you tell me something. Well, like, because Leroy was going to drown the guy.
It never happens.
Like,
well, yeah, that's, I guess, the... That,
well, they
it's,
dunk
it's
him,
a
but
minor
he just,
payoff.
Like,
he dunks the dude's head into the tank and he pulls him out and there's no living.
Yeah, I thought he was going to come up headless.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, oh, this is going to be
another
like,
well, then what's going to happen to Bruce Leroy? It's like, you're all a pacifist dude and you fucking unwittingly fed this guy to a fucking school of piranha.
But in a weird way, I think that's where, because like, I've enjoyed the movie up to this point, but I think that's when the movie fails for me is because like, having the girl be kidnapped and then rescued automatically, it's like, well, fuck, well, that was your ending already, kind of. Like, they're going to have to kidnap her again by the end of this movie for there to be another threat. So now it's about her, like, oh, my God, this cute guy like I who saved me earlier in the movie, he found me again, and this guy's just a numbnuts and just like, you know, do you have the medallion that I dropped?
Yeah, and she's like, I want to get with you. And he's like,
I don't know what to do. I have a friend who...
It's not me.
friend. ...is very gay and doesn't know...
His brother, who's like 14 years old, is telling him, like, you know...
That is a great conversation. For that, like, 4 minutes where they're just walking and talking and everything. Like, that kid's laying it down. And dude. I was, like, with him. I'm like, yes, I like this character.
He's a good kid actor.
He's good. He was really
he's
good.
He's a really good kid actor. Like, I don't know if he did TV or
I don't know,
what he did.
He was
did,
really
but,
good.
But, yeah, tell him, like, you wouldn't even know what to do with it if you had blah, blah, blah. And it's like something about the moves.
Right,
and,
or it being an art. And, man, you don't even have a paintbrush.
Yeah.
That's a good line. This kid's laying out good lines.
But, then, but I did like how it showed how, like, in a weird way to me personally, it showed kind of, like, how shallow Bruce Leroy's philosophy is when he just when he tries to repeat that, like, so he just hears people say shit, then just repeats it verbatim. So it's like, does he even think? Because like,
yeah, he's just really good at fucking.
But if you're thinking about Eastern philosophy, you should, you know, usually you got to think about the saying. But then he's just like paintbrush. But he don't even he's not even thinking about it. He's just repeating the exact fucking words.
Yeah, because that's all he does really in the dojo, right? Whenever he's doling out the Asian proverbs. You know, to his students.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, whatever. Give me one.
Blade of grass. Sure, go to us to give me one.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Whatever. Yeah, but I mean, that's all his character really is a Mr. Asian proverb. Right?
Yeah, it's the rest of the
he's got Johnny Yu is like, huh? Whenever he spouts one off. Johnny Yu's one of his students in the dojo.
Who's kind of like your comedy?
Who's like the third best part of this movie? Like he was great.
Well, I do like his whole little character thing was good too. Quite get it. He's in this class and he's not quite a martial artist. He can't quite get it.
But when he gets it,
it was a funny joke about like I'm an Asian guy, so all I got to do is act emotional and like whatever. People just think I know how to fight. That's a really funny joke.
It's really funny.
But he did know some massive nunchucks.
I do like how that section of the movie, it does get into this kind of cross reference where there's Asian people that are being American and let alone the. You know, when Bruce Leroy goes to the fortune, we find out some dumb fortune cookie company.
Plus the three guys who
they're acting black.
That's what. I like the reversal of some of the roles.
It's fucking hilarious.
It's really good.
Dude, today's like college crowd would go apeshit, right? You got this like. Because cultural appropriation is seen as bad, where this movie is showing cultural appropriation is cultural appreciation.
Yeah.
You know, wanting to act like the other person is just saying how much you like their culture. And that's actually what fucking art is. Art is saying, I mean, this movie is good. But this movie is... Black people showing how, like, oh, this Asian shit, like, really influenced us to the point where we want to make this other art that you know, that's where I'm like, holy fuck, this movie kind of, I wish there was more of a focus on that, but right. I like how it's not the focus. It doesn't become some big social commentary.
Right, you get that little bit in there, but it's nice. Right, it's this awesome. Influenced us, we're going to create these characters who are being influenced.
You have a
by
black guy acting completely fucking Chinese and alien, like he's just fresh off the fucking boat. And these other guys that are like New York, Harlem, Asian dudes.
Playing craps in the warehouse.
Playing craps.
But they don't know how to play craps.
Yeah, I'm saying.
They have like an instruction book.
At least
and
not
they don't
the
understand.
Harlem way that.
Or like they're trying
Bruce
to
Leroy
act black.
It.
Maybe that's what they're trying to say, like they don't really know.
I think they were trying to act black. Yeah. I mean, it was funny, but yeah.
But it's really dumb of Bruce Leroy to think that, like, this fortune cookie, like, he doesn't know what fortune cookies are. Like, it was like, what the fuck? So
he knew what a fortune cookie was.
Then why wouldn't he see that some dumb guy's like, fortune cookie, why is the master here? Why is it like, the guy had no questions.
Because he's lived in a dojo for 18 years, apparently.
He's basically an idiot. He's a fucking
idiot. He's basically an idiot. He's basically an idiot.
This is the story of an autistic kid.
Who's really good at martial arts and nothing else.
I do like how his family owned a pizzeria. I thought that was very...
I love the slogan.
In every...
Direct your pizza to Papa Green.
Papa Green's Pizzeria.
That's
but that's something if you watch a lot of like Japanese cartoons and a lot of like Chinese, the characters' parents always run like noodle shops and shit like that. Yeah, that's why I was like, oh, that's great. That's
and they always get destroyed at some point.
Yeah, always or something. So I just thought that was, I was like, that's a great touch, even with the pizza and all that shit. Because like this is totally 80s. Everything about this is totally 80s. He dresses like a ninja. Even though it's like, so what are you doing? Are you doing Chinese or Japan? This movie doesn't know if it's doing Chinese or Japanese. Right, it doesn't know if it's doing Kung Fu, Karate, whatever. I'm sure they're saying the same thing. Like, well, fuck it. All the same. And like, no! Not the same!
Well, you were talking about the appropriation of cultures. I mean, like, you see so much, you know, in black culture, the appropriation of... Like Chinese culture, like I'm saying, like real, you know, like Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
And
well, this whole movie is Wu-Tang Clan. Like we talked about, Busta Rhymes dressed like Show Enough in a That was the song, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, these guys. I mean, this movie does have a staple in.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that group, but I guess that I meant the group, the band, not the, like that group of people.
Yeah.
You know, black people love this movie. He's like, hey, let's not say that.
You meant the Wu-Tang Clan.
No, I meant the Wu-Tang.
Okay.
Well,
not that I fear the, you know.
So what?
That's the problem. It's like it becomes like a how, like, I do not know what humans do.
He's like
kiss
Johnny Five.
Girls. It's just like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
And until they have to kidnap the girl again. That's why I was like, why'd they ruin the kidnapping?
Because she gives him an open at one point, comes in like, I need a bodyguard to protect my body.
And she really does. Dude, she goes, she lays
she
it
was
on
high in that scene, dude. I swear to God, that actress was stoned out of her mind because she can't help but giggle with everything.
Giggle,
she says.
Bite her lip. Like,
it's very like.
Oh, the
loose,
biting her lip
dude.
Was sexy.
Oh, very
it was
loose.
Flirting.
Right? She licked it.
I'm being very sexy right now because I did the coke.
It was the 80s.
It was the 80s. You feel
the
sexy 80s. Doing
that's
the coke.
What they did.
But why does
that's
he turn her sexy? Down? He's just like, no, I get this other stuff going on. Because the Shonuff and his crew is like
he
destroyed my parents' pizzeria.
He's looking for the master.
Yeah, like, master is like a chastity belt.
The master
over his,
is yeah. actually just Peace. a machine in the back of the.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he finds that out by going. Well, he has to watch a Bruce Lee movie, and then everything in his fucking life needs to be directed by
oh,
Bruce
God,
Lee.
Oh God, that
movies.
Was like another scene where he goes.
That was the thing.
She takes him.
Yes.
She takes him to the Seventh Heaven set, and in order to try and attract this guy, you actually pointed out like because I'm
like,
why
a
is
Chinese.
She dressing like a China Chinese
her wardrobe?
Because like a biker, if you're a biker, Asian. You have to dress in all leather and do the braided ponytail. Yeah. Like you have to look because the guys only care about motorcycles and leather. So you have to like me too.
Like all of her clothes are these elaborate sparkly costumes, and then all of a sudden Bruce Leroy comes along. And it's a sparkly, like, kimono.
Yeah, it's like a, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a
and
great.
And then she makes him, like, a mixtape in a way.
Oh, but that
video.
Was what I was saying. It was, like, fantastic.
You got to find
because
the
fucking
song
is what Travis is singing. The song is about you have to find the fucking glow. And it's set to the, like, a
montage
of Bruce
like,
Lee
Big
movies.
Boss, yeah. Chinese Connection.
And the kid is so, like, enamored
so
of what
he's
up. Seeing.
He don't even care about the tits sitting next to him. Like,
care
she's
at
just
all.
Like. She's basically taking her panties off, and it's just like, this movie, it's so great.
Yeah, oh, it's great that you did this. And then Bruce Lee kisses a woman in the movie, and so he's finally like,
she kisses okay. him first. Yeah, she tries does. To kiss him, and he backs off like he's some fucking, like, are you 12? Are you...
He'd rather fuck Bruce Lee.
Or something, right? Like, he's just like, you're not Asian. I was kind of hoping for an Asian wife. I was hoping to have I was going to get an arranged marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of woman would Bruce
but
Lee
But yeah, as
go
soon
for?
As yeah. it happens in the Bruce Lee film, then he's like, all right,
Bruce Lee.
That's how you do how it. You do Bruce it. Lee fucks chicks. I fucks chicks.
Very weird.
And then all that's completely destroyed.
Once again,
it's
just like, is this
they...
from, like, if you want to see another character like this, watch Earth Girls Are Easy.
Was that Jeff Goldblum? Or
Jeff
something?
Goldblum, yeah, Jim Carrey.
Aliens.
Yeah, they're aliens. And, but yeah, he's a fucking alien in this movie. That's just like, gonna... what are, I mean, I love that he's eating chopsticks or
popcorn
with
chopsticks
in the movie.
Bravo.
It's such, it's things like that that make this movie really watchable, or these little things are like, what the fuck, dude? What are you doing? That's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
But just the fact that, well, I mean, we don't necessarily get another kidnapping. We get the thug. You know, after we get the awesome fucking, like, dissing of the dude.
Oh, wait, did we finish that thought that he sees the, Bruce Lee going in disguise.
Oh.
So he's like, I'm going to infiltrate the master's lair by going in disguise. So he actually goes there. It's like, okay, I'm going to talk black.
Bro.
Yeah. To try and get in and find the master.
The That's master what I'm like. That is good acting. If he doesn't actually.
Some dumb
guy. If he actually doesn't have some weird. Because I don't know. With a name like Tymac? I mean, he might be foreign, dude.
Well, he does have a last name.
What is it? Leroy
Johnson.
No, it started with a G, and it sounded Latino to me, but that could be.
Well, he looks a little Puerto
Rican. Tymac Gear.
I'm just saying. No, but anyway, but that's what I was like.
Maybe it's Tymac.
Wouldn't he be better at impersonating a black person if he was more natural? That's like maybe, but I don't know.
Maybe the whole thing was a performance.
I'm sure it is. That's why I'm like, so he's kind of
a
bad kind of a...
Maybe he's like, yo, hey.
I've always said acting's not so hard. You know, you've got a lot of time, a lot of takes. I don't think acting's that hard.
Apparently he didn't have a lot of either.
Well, but he did have the crying scene. We'll talk about that. Where I thought, that was fucking great. The guy cried.
How many takes did that take?
But still, he did it from dry eye to tear. Yeah, it wasn't a cutaway. It wasn't a whatever. He didn't just cut away and have the tear rolling down. He cried somehow.
You saw those tears well enough.
Yeah, like I said, I thought she was stabbing him in the side.
The actress,
yes.
You're going to cry, damn it.
She's like, her high heels on his fucking foot. Something. I'm very sorry. But that scene even goes nowhere, because that's when he learns all the masters, the fucking machine. That's just like, and it's just like, dude, we just made it up to make our fortune cookie company sound awesome, which is awesome because fortune cookies were created in, I want to say, in San Francisco in 1940 something or some shit, like 50 something maybe.
Oh yeah, that's all us.
Yeah, it's American. It's not anything doing with Chinese.
You're fucking ruining my childhood.
Well, no, I'm just saying,
but yeah, for all the kids out there, we're sorry.
I just want you to know.
Yep, there is no Santa Claus. Oh, Jesus Christ, what
everything's
have I done?
Fake.
I'm not saying the Chinese didn't impart the wisdom they brought with their culture over to America and infuse them into the.
Confucius did say, just not in a fortune cookie.
Yeah, I just don't think. They're just, you know, trying to sell their like nasty.
Well, was that
wafers.
The moment in the this is after the pizzeria has been smashed and he cries and all that? It was that.
That's what I'm saying. It's a confusing edit because
the
girl.
That.
Well, we kind of did. It got destroyed. We know
it
that,
did. But it's just great the way it got destroyed, especially the ending where the one guy's just walking out, turns around, and then just kicks the other window out.
But first, like, he grabs a slice of pizza on the way out.
Yeah, grabs
a slice
of pizza.
That was great. Every 80s movie needs pizza.
Beautiful.
Yeah, showing up and his crew show up, want to find Bruce Leroy. He's not there.
Like I said, you always fuck up the family.
But that's the moment, isn't it, that like gives him either the self-doubt or something, because his brother's like, you know, it's like,
coward.
This place got fucked up because of you. You're a coward.
Yeah,
like, what's all this martial arts shit for if you don't use it?
It's a crucial scene.
And so that's when he goes back to the dojo, and he's...
That's why that kid's a good actor.
Was that when she says, I want a bodyguard?
Yes, because like, then he's just like training until...
Yeah,
he's like,
I'm not doing it.
What else
can I do? He's got to train.
It's like Rocky montage.
Yeah. And you got to get out of here because you're just distracting me.
He's like, I don't know.
Well, see, I don't know, because what was he doing? Okay, like we said, the evil guy, Arcadia's girlfriend, has the speech about how, like, you know what? You just use people. You're this little fucking dude. Yep.
I think
you just
more about
you need people. Yeah, get by on my tits. I'm going back to...
It's beautiful.
It's a great scene.
I'm
going to
watch it again.
She's a great actress,
so
dude. That's the whole heart.
It really is.
It really is. Yeah. It's fantastic.
I couldn't believe it coming from this movie.
I'll admit, I was teary-eyed in this scene.
Just like,
is it because I'm high, or is it because it's a great scene? See, I don't know. I heard marijuana induces
emotions of a high level.
What's the I'm sorry.
Endorphins?
Yeah, endorphins.
Something.
Yeah,
it really was.
Empathy?
But still, the female hormone.
Okay.
But all
right.
Yeah, exactly.
Estrogen.
Thank you.
Oh,
endorphins.
Wow,
yeah, estrogen. That's why Kevin Smith cries a lot, because he smokes weed every day.
Oh, there you go. He does.
It happens,
lot.
Dude. I really think that's because I do cry a lot at a lot of movies. I'm like, dude, I think this is true. Would I cry if I wasn't high? Because you just get so in tune with the emotion of the character that you're just really thinking about what it is to be in their shoes, and you're like, dude.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's the movie. Well, but I. Like I said, I just,
If you're going with estrogen, I didn't cry.
I'm just saying.
You're in a heightened stage.
Well, I do that. I
to be more affected
dude,
by
I,
things
I,
than
I
normal.
I buy into characters. I do. I can 100% put myself in their shoes and be 100%. Oh, I remember when I was 12, I cried at the Toxic Avenger when they chased them out of the window. I'm like, these fucking people are so mean. They chased this geek.
Your voice quivered for a second right
dude,
there.
Until he killed himself. Melvin the Mob Boy killed himself. And everybody's still laughing at him. That made me cry as a kid because I'm like, they're laughing at
that's
this guy
intense.
Trying to kill himself. It's intense. Oh, yeah. It's not in the movie, but it's intense. But anyway, but that's why, okay, I'm confused because, okay, the girl has her awesome speech against the guy, and then she's like, I'm going to war. Because I love the fact that she's like, you're saying it's for me, but. I don't want you to kill anybody for me. This is not even that important to me.
Oh, right.
You want me to be this, like, piece of ass pop star, and you're willing to kill people for it's for you. It's not for me. You just want to inflict your power. But and then she goes to warn Leroy at his dojo, and she just makes the statement of like, tell him to stay away from Seventh Heaven because she just knows that that's what the dude's targeting. But then somehow. Leroy? Wait till you see Bad Seed. You'll start saying Leroy. It's a more of a southern way of saying Leroy. Leroy. Well, I think it's a southern name. Leroy. It should be said Leroy. Anyway.
French Quarter.
That's neither here nor there.
I got it.
Leroy.
Creole. Got it.
Yo.
Well, this makes me think
go ahead. But then the scene is like, well, then fucking Timac or Leroy, he's coming in with a vengeance, getting his ninja shit together. He's like, how does he fucking know? Like, he doesn't know it's urgent. She's just like, tell him to stay away from Seventh Heaven. She doesn't say anything about, like, he's there now, kidnapping her. You know, there's no reason for him to know.
It was like
that she is in ultimate danger. He's like, I must get ready for the ultimate battle.
Well, he was basically saying that, or she's basically saying that her boyfriend is coming after him with like everything that he's got. Yeah. He's out like recruiting muscle.
So do you think he's just going to stake out?
I think
it's not that he's getting ready to go in for the battle, but he's going in just to stake out Seventh Heaven for when he attacks.
I think he was going there to basically head off an attack that was coming to him. Like at that point, he was like, "I'm going to bring the fight to them instead of just waiting."
Because to me, the scene plays out like they have her.
Well,
that's just the body motion.
The beginning thing with the arrow, he doesn't know where
he knows without knowing.
He's got Fist of Monkey.
There it is. And then
he's
we get
got
another.
The fist of monkey.
Have we talked
and
about
then we got
like,
another good scene with Johnny U?
The bad guys. The plot here that the bad guy has is that this TV show in New York. It's one television show,
but
apparently
that's a big deal.
It has so
it's
much.
National.
I guess
I don't know.
And it's the 80s.
It has so much cachet that if you get your video played on that, then it makes your career. And the fact that he kidnaps her.
Well, you know that's all music videos were. All music videos weren't made just to be music videos. Music videos were purely promotional.
They were made to get played.
To
art form.
It was just sent to producers. But then when they're like, holy shit, there's a market to play the videos? People want to see the videos? That's why a lot of early videos are just the band playing on stage, because they're just showing, this is what these guys look like.
Right.
Oh, imagine or whatever. So it would be a big deal getting something played on Soul
Train or
American
Bandstand.
It's just
the corniest fucking thing. Like, he spends so much time like, you're going to play our music. Like, first of all, he asks, and William H. Macy is his lackey.
JJ!
The shoveler himself, who's always a great friend guy.
The best jacket I've ever
because again, 80s fashion.
I wanted to know why. Okay, he owes
Barry Gordon.
Obviously, he owes something to Arcadia. That's why he's so frantic about, like, you gotta play the video. This guy is not to be fucked with. And I was like, he's the guy from Fargo. He is his character from Fargo.
And he just
but we
ran
don't
off.
Find out. We don't find out why the guy is indebted at all.
Right, he's in
probably
one scene.
Not even a part of the movie.
Young William H. Macy.
But it's just the way he acts. It's like, this guy, dude, he's great.
There's also
William H. Macy's great.
There's also an appearance by Keisha Knight Pullingham from the Cosby Show.
Yeah, the little
Rudy.
For one scene, and Ernie Reyes Jr.
Fucking Reyes Jr. One of my favorite,
he's amazing.
I wouldn't even be as interested in martial arts if it wasn't
Well, sure, but he's amazing in this. It's like, he's 2 years old in this movie.
He's the best. I think he was a second degree black belt by the time he was 10.
Yeah.
And in this movie, he fights his father, Ernie Reyes Sr., who's one of the fight choreographers of the movie. Mm-hmm. That's why, because I think you guys were saying he fights the same guy every time.
Yeah, if you notice, he fights the same guy every time.
So it's probably his father.
It's
probably his father. But if you don't know Ernie Reyes Jr. is the he was in the he was the martial arts.
He's in the Rundown. Hello,
yeah. He was the body double of Donatello in the first Ninja Turtles movie.
Yes.
Then he was.
Then he got a part in the second as
the pizza delivery guy, Kino.
Kino.
And then he's been he was in Red. I want to say this or Red Sonja might have been his first movie.
Right. It was the same year.
So we don't know which they filmed first. They might have filmed Red Sonja first because there's more production involved.
And it's in
so it could
Italy
take longer.
The fuck they shot that.
Don't work on everything. You can find him hanging around the set of, I think.
But yeah, wasn't it great to see him in Rundown? As soon as he flipped into the scene, I was like, holy fuck. I was probably the only guy in the room as excited as that. It's like, I can't believe Ernie Reyes Jr. Like, my favorite. I mean, to me, I would say he's my favorite American martial artist than movies, just because I don't know why. Maybe it's because I was a kid at another kid being fucking amazing, even though, I mean, of course, because, I mean, he had the TV show Sidekicks where he was adopted by the cop. That's
Gil
a
Gerard.
Great fucking show. Bill Gerard.
Gil Gerard.
Gil Gerard.
That was Buck Rogers in the 21st century.
Holy fuck.
25th century? 25th.
And the 21st? I don't know.
Yeah.
25th, maybe.
Buck Rogers. This is the big showdown.
So,
Duck Dodgers.
So Arcadia just shows up. Set. Yeah, so they're just take, because that's what I don't buy about, in a weird way, I don't buy. The chick's just like, he went crazy. So now Arcadia doesn't
there are
have a
glowing,
plot.
There are glowing hands at the end of this movie. There's not much
well,
you should
yeah,
buy
we're
about
definitely
this.
Gonna get to that, because that's why I've got some
but,
love for
but the studio scene. But the studio scene is one of like the it. It's one of the best joke payoffs of the movie for me, in that Johnny, you can finally just fight people.
Oh no, like he can do nunchucks like a
he's
motherfucker.
Got it.
He can do nunchucks, but he can
it.
Fight people. He's like,
it is pretty cool.
That's a great payoff for me. Like he I like because he's making jokes the entire time. He gets locked in the closet earlier on. He gets locked in the closet. Like, I'm afraid of the dark.
So it's almost
banging
like,
on the door.
It,
like,
it
he's
is
great.
Almost just like Bruce Leroy's character's arc, where it's really you. You know how to fight, or you become the master once you're
right.
actually right. pressed with right. having to use it.
When but it's shortened when it's just for comedic training, effect, but
think,
it's really good.
I think what even made that even better is the fact that Bruce Leroy stops fighting and is like, you got it, Johnny!
Yeah. They all give themselves the kung fu thumbs up. Yeah.
Oh, so good. Love that part.
Which this movie, I wonder if they, because you know in Europe, they really don't show movies with nunchucks, or they edit nunchucks out, because nunchucks are illegal kids, yeah, most everywhere. Really. Like, you know, yeah. if you watch Ninja Turtles over there. Number one, they're not called ninjas. It's like teenage hero, blah, blah, blah. Because they won't refer.
Get to, the fuck.
Well, ninjas teenage are assassins.
Hero
they're not going to have assassins be their
still
hero.
Works.
And then, same thing with nunchucks. Since nunchucks are illegal, they actually have a lot of edited scenes where Michelangelo is
so
using.
So, is that scene where he's flipping around on one finger just cut out of the movie? That's
maybe. Oh, I don't know that about scene. That. I don't know about in the 90s, okay. but in the 80s when it was more made, I know, like. You can actually go back and watch the 80s Ninja Turtles cartoon, and sometimes Michelangelo uses, I don't even know why this is better, but it's like a thing with a hook and a chain.
Yeah, that's why.
That was.
Wait, is that
no,
why?
No. Like a, it looks like a stick.
It does, but it's rounded.
Looks like a
is that why every
a,
Michelangelo action figure came with that shit?
Yeah,
and
because,
sometimes not nunchucks?
Because
they always came with that shit.
Because.
And I didn't know why.
In most of the sometimes world, nunchucks are illegal because, I mean, fuck, you will smash someone's head in with one
yeah.
very easily.
I got Michelangelo action figures, no nunchucks. Had that fucking hook shit, and I didn't understand why.
Yeah, dude, that is why. Because nunchucks are that's illegal most places. Not that
like
we're talking about Ninja Turtles, but.
Did we cover this on our Ninja Turtles
arts,
episode that we did?
No.
For God's
maybe
sakes.
Not. I'm sure I did. I that's like some Ninja Turtle trivia I got.
Yeah.
Just because it's interesting to me that in a lot of other countries, like, so in that scene, we might have not seen. I wonder what they've done with Bruce Lee movies overseas, if they've edited out the nunchucks.
I mean, they could be illegal
there's always
in the country,
like,
but can't you have it in the movie? I mean,
well, no,
because
they don't want to. They don't want
like,
to influence. Dude, a lot of other places in the world are more worried about the influences through movies and what they consider to be propaganda, you know, than. Other places, I suppose.
Well, we got to get to the
we kind of champion it. Everybody
we
else
have to
is
get
like,
to the,
dude,
glowing.
The glowing. When you know yeah. you're yeah. the master, like I said, I like that they got the same story arc. He's not the master until you accept that, dude, you are the man. You can't be looking for a master, which right. I've always thought is a beautiful philosophy. Just yeah. like Buddha went around and he tried to learn philosophy and religion from all these people, but it wasn't until he gave up on all of them and he sat beneath the Bodhi tree, it came to him. The idea that. That you need to take almost responsibility for yourself. It's not if all you're doing is learning, you're never going to fucking know anything. At some point in time, you need to make a decision that I fucking know what I'm talking about. I know what I feel. I know what instead of learning, because that just means right. you're. You know, you're a student constantly.
Right, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
you won't.
Yeah, at some point, the student has to become the master. And that's the point of the movie.
But the awesome thing
is
that when he
you
finally,
are the master.
When he finally does fight Shonuff has the glow.
What? He has the glow.
You're saying it wrong.
Shonuff.
You're saying Shonuff.
Don't say
it
like Shogun.
Yeah, you're very white
you're
right
now. You're saying
it
white.
Shonuff.
So Shonuff.
Kiss my Converse.
Oh, God,
shows
yes.
up, but he's got the glow. He is
he's
the
master.
It was surprising. But
because he's confident
but
himself.
But what they talked about earlier is that it's just his hands.
Just his hands.
And when he punches fucking Bruce Leroy, there's sparks
there's
flying.
There's sparks and everything.
Yeah.
It's great. It's like a lightsaber fight with martial arts, dude. That's what makes this
awesome.
Red laser.
When I was a kid, it was the closest thing to like Street Fighter. I don't know why I associate it with Street Fighter, but just the idea that like channeling your chi and all that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the closest thing. They're like, holy fuck, dude. This is totally like, their hands are glowing and there's sparks flying when they're punching each other.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's wonderful. It's magical, really. And then you got the music going, the Last Dragon fucking song, like in the background. The
terrible, terrible Last Dragon song. Oh, I don't like the way that it, like,
you mean when, the wonderful Last Dragon song?
Yeah, I don't necessarily mind the Last Dragon song.
Well, they play that song, like, while they're actually fighting, and, you know, dude's got the yellow glow and Shona
has the red.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no. No.
But it, like, it stops when he gets drowned, right? And then you're like, he's
imagining things.
Dude shoots
him.
No,
that's at the end.
You're jumping ahead.
Whoa, Jesus.
He's getting drowned by Shona.
Jesus, Tom.
Yeah, but that's not where
the jump ahead a little bit.
I'm talking about the fucking song. It, like, fades out, and you're like...
It is, but you're skipping ahead. We're getting to the point where he gets the glow.
You totally Tom the ending.
Because he starts getting... Yeah, he starts getting drowned by Shona.
He's having the flashbacks.
He's having flashbacks of, like... The master. When you search for the master, and then the chick's like, "You look like a master of me."
I really wish it would have been like one of the flashbacks would have been like the guy going, "And I'm going to Miami."
I'm going to Miami.
That would have been great. That goes into parody a little bit, but that would have made me laugh.
And that music playing underneath the montage. You are the last.
Yeah,
and it's
you
just
are
so,
the last.
There you go. Getting it.
It is almost like the never-ending story.
God, I want to make a movie where Travis just sings these
songs.
You
are the last dragon. We almost forgot. I'm just going to mention real quickly before we get back to the end fight. When he returns back to the master to find out, like, oh, dude, the fortune cookie fucking dude was fake. I like how the dude picks up a fortune cookie and takes the fortune out. He's like, oh, he's giving him this Eastern philosophy bullshit. So I blame the fucking sensei. He's been filling his head with this movie bullshit. Like, don't forget your $50 a month membership, you know. Yeah. Filling his head with bullshit.
I like the master because he's like... He understands how stupid Bruce Leroy is, and he just keeps feeding him this shit. He's like, "You gotta get it.
He did make it into martial, but in the same way, he is almost like the sidekick that plays to the beliefs of the person. Yeah. They make him
because he never exhibits the glow himself, right?
No,
he just
talks about the glow, but that's a good thing, right? Because you took it as I thought you knew it was gonna be. Set up. When I was watching the movie, I was like, oh, fuck, Colin's going to be like, I saw that coming. Boo-hoo.
Because I didn't think it was actually
going to happen. I know, that's what's so great.
Fucking lightsaber.
Lightsaber.
It would have been great if he'd gone back, showed it to the sensei that he was glowing, and the sensei was like, holy shit, that's real?
Jesus Christ. But this is crazy, because then Bruce Leroy, to me, he looks a little insane when he realizes, like...
He does. He's got that laugh.
He looks like a supervillain.
He does. I love it.
I do kind of love it, just because I like the... Well, they don't say this in the movie, but the idea that, like, okay, you learn... Like, one day we'll watch the... it's called Street Fighter Assassin's Fist. Yeah, we're getting there. Street Fighter's Assassin's Fist. They talk about how, like... The Hayuken power, the better and better you get at it, the more it corrupts your soul. If you master it, you will become evil because the power corrupts, absolutely. This movie didn't say that, but that's what I got. I'm like, he's fucking nuts now. He's just like, I'm glowing. I thought he was going to go crazy. But then, when the bad guy, then
he starts
like,
shorting out.
Fuck all this.
That sound effect.
The shorting out is awesome because, once again, that's one of those things that you really see. Well, his self-doubt. It's one of those things where your own...
I thought you said he has gout.
Gout.
That doesn't affect... That's not
your chi starts from the feet.
It was cool in that scene where they actually started fighting. Where they started fighting because it was the first time in the movie that Bruce Leroy didn't have the upper hand. Like, when Shona actually does come in there, it's like, oh, shit. Like, this is, he has met his match. He can
He's very tall.
Blow.
Yeah, the rest of the movie, one kick.
It's very tall.
Takes out anybody. Like, there's a special scene to show, like, we're collecting all these bad guys to fight him, and he kicks them all once, and they fall
and
down.
They're done.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Well, then they all get
I
up.
Guess.
Well, all they all get nothing. Up, but that's when his students come in and take over. And
that's true.
That's when they're like, plan B, show
all the foot soldiers.
That's true. Yeah. But I still thought that was just kind of like, This movie, it directs...
It did seem like a rogues
action
gallery
action like Chris Nolan.
Like,
the director doesn't know how to direct martial, like, any fighting.
It's not that bad.
It is, to me. There was one scene where there was a nice, like... Because most good martial arts movies, they kind of look like establishing shots. they're just nice wide shots with both characters, so you can just fucking see they do it once. And I was like, oh, neither. Oh, shit. They just fucking, god damn it.
It happened already. Oh, shit.
You know, but that's, I don't know. It's one of those things where you're afraid. I mean, I don't know if that's the whole, you're afraid to show, because I mean, without actual Chinese, like brilliant fucking martial artists that can actually do shit really fast and make it really entertaining, maybe, and we talked, when we watched Ninja 3 The Domination, we talked about how in these days they kind of wanted action to be slow, that way the camera can capture it, and but it just produces this really slow action-y sort of. So I don't know if either that affected it or I don't know.
Better
because you're trying to hide the slow movement.
I think they by making
your
you have multiple angles or whatever you cover it from different.
There's nothing I could really be like, oh wow, like but no, except enough. For the one, except for fucking Ernie Reyes Jr. Yeah. When the camera stood back and watched him kick people's asses,
brought the guy up,
he's actually back, like, fucking really talented. Bring out the 10-year-old. Yeah. I was really excited really when he showed up. I
time forgot Ernie Reyes pretty good.
It's not that he's not pretty good.
Johnny, you.
It's not that he's not.
Can we sing the praises of Johnny?
Well, but we barely.
Awesome. Johnny is my favorite.
He was good as the Americanized, like, if you're watching Teen Wolf, he's Styles. If you're watching, like, if you're watching 80s movies, he's the fuck. He should have been smoking pot at one point in time or something, like, and tried to, like, wave it away and hide it from Ty Mac or Bruce Leroy. Or,
yeah. Well, to get to the end of this movie, he does catch a fucking bullet in his mouth when the bad guy shoots at him.
There had to have been, like, a time previous where it's like, oh, fuck, he did fight some, like, gang in Harlem and caught. Like,
it's something, I mean, how many times you get shot at in the face and catch a fucking bullet?
Dragon! Play the song. I need the song.
He does get the girl at the end, right? Do they go off happily ever after? Do I don't even remember this.
Yeah, because after it's all said and done, she has to go on her show.
Right back to like the fucking hair and makeup people show up with the police. And they're like, you're late, honey.
Yeah.
Can you teach me some moves?
I'm not going to be able to do anything with your hair.
Oh my God. Are you in danger, Jesus?
Yeah,
but Leroy shows up. At first, I'm like, everybody's dressed white. In white. Everybody's but that's white. She says about her cloud dancers.
Her cloud dancers.
Seventh Heaven has cloud dancers, and we see that Leroy's brother.
Now got all to the be main characters are part of.
Yeah, they're all part of the cloud dancers. And then he shows up with flowers and no shirt on. You know, just like hanging. You know, it's like this fucking guy's cocky now. He got the glow, and now he's just showing his chest off. But then, there's a really hilarious joke. About cutting to a commercial, so he yells out like, "Teach me moves!" He's like, "Fuck me, fuck me!"
That'd be great.
Yeah,
fuck me.
And then it has like the worst R&B closing song.
The closing song is bad.
It should have been like En Vogue or something.
Yeah,
and then they're gone.
But it does get through a few of the soundtrack songs really quickly.
Well, you have to. You got to get, you know, you're plugging that soundtrack album.
Listen to the rhythm of the night, dancing to the morning light. Was that on a Ninja Turtle? No, that's
a separate review for the fucking music of this movie. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up.
I think that's it. I'm done with it.
Like, we should always end when Travis announces he's done.
Whose movie was this tonight?
Yes.
It was. It's a good pick. I love hate this movie.
All right.
I love hate it.
All right. So we're gonna summon Igor. So
Igor.
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Thank you, Igor.
Hurt his ears. Don't yell so loud. He's very sensitive.
He hasn't cleaned them in weeks. Okay. So you probably can't hear it.
Right. We got to yell loud.
I got this goo encrusted thing here. All right.
Is that mail by letter?
It is. Mail by letter. Okay. So here we go. And by the way, folks, you can get a hold of us if you want to talk to us. And we encourage that you do, because how else do we know what you think about what we're doing here on Facebook or a Saturday Night Freak Show?
Tell us you like us, please. We need confirmation.
We need to know this is not for nothing.
We won't even talk about it if you don't like it.
Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. Also on Twitter at Sat Freak Show, and you can reach us by email, SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com. So first, we have about our Ninja 3 episode.
Yeah.
Dom Cree writes in.
Hello, Dom.
And he says, guys, I've waited long enough, but I think it's time to ask the burning questions. He's got two. Number one, dumb. You should get are '80s hairstyles hot or not?
Hot. No.
Male or female?
It doesn't matter.
They're the same. Like, what if we can differentiate?
It's true. Big is beautiful. Just don't smoke Nero.
Maybe like, what's her name in Working Girl? I can take that. Not Joan Cusack. Melanie Griffith in Working Girl. I can take that hair.
80s hair makes 80s earrings look better.
That's true.
You need to hide the earrings underneath the hair.
His second question is, are the 80s the pinnacle of attractive actresses in film?
No.
Ooh, I don't know about that, because most of them couldn't act, so they're beautiful more than they were actors. So I do love 80s actresses.
There's a lot of 80s actresses, and I'm like, you're the love interest?
Yeah, well, I can't do it. It's not for me.
The problem is just the hairstyle, right? They're always like, she's an Alan Sheedy. Like, give her the Alan Sheedy hair.
Yeah.
Or she's a, you know, give her the fucking, like, give her negligee, like, you know, make it look like Madonna or something like that. You know, that's the problem with beautiful fucking actresses of the 80s is they were victims of the style.
Yeah, they were
victims of the style, like whatever they wanted to do. That's why I thought it was really funny in this movie how the girlfriend, they saw how the boyfriend or the bad guy was dressing her like this crazy fucking 80s Cyndi Lauper fucking.
When she leaves later on, she's more normal.
She looks more normal, but she still looks like a stripper.
It's a little weird.
A normal stripper.
She's a rock star.
A regular stripper. Not the featured stripper, just the.
Not featured, not like.
Just the separate side stripper.
Right.
The 4 o'clock. Yeah.
4 o'clock.
She's older.
Like, does anybody want a lap dance?
She's the lunch.
I didn't think so.
Oh, God. All right. So, also, Babette Georgie writes.
I love Babette.
Hi, Babette.
She says,
the 80s art. Oh, my God. Very Duran Duran.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Packard writes in, Show Kasugi with a dozen exclamation marks. That's it. Jacob Contner writes in on Twitter, says, love Ninja 3. Great episode, guys. You and Refund Theater nailed it. Love the mailbag rant about nudity in the 80s. Keep it up.
Woo! Is Refund Theater another?
I think it's another podcast. Yeah, we're going to have to check that out.
Hey, we're being associated with other podcasts, good or bad. Like, thank you.
There you go.
Thank you for writing in, people.
Well, we have more.
Oh, shit.
And then on our Watchers episode, Susan Darko writes in, the book was amazing. I absolutely detest the fact that the movie turned the main human character into a teenager.
Kids,
the book was much better.
Where he's a Marine.
He's a Marine. Yeah. I want to read the
book. Which I heard part two is more like.
Part two is more like the
book.
Actual book.
Well, the
better
sentiment
monster too.
Is
there's actually a monster in that one.
Echoed by Alec Writer 120 on Twitter. He says he just read the book and it's cheesy to say the least.
Oh.
So what do we got here?
It's a pretty cheesy idea anyway, right? A biological monster is connected to a cute dog.
I don't know. All right, I will read it and let you both know.
I do want to
where
read
we
it.
Run.
For some reason, I'll listen to the audiobook on YouTube. Even though I'm afraid because the audiobook, when you start listening to it, it sounds like it drops right in. I'm like, is this the fucking beginning? Or like, it feels like you're dropping in the middle of a chapter, so it worries me. Yeah. So I haven't listened to it yet. I mean, it's 8 hours. It seems like that'd be the whole book.
Yeah,
but you would hope.
But just hours? The way, yeah. But just the way when you started, you're like, blah, blah, blah. I was like, holy fuck, that's like really, it sounds like just the edit was really quick. Usually they're just like, this is a LibriVox recording, you know, or something like that.
It will be narrated by Jim Dale and no one else.
I want to do that, right? It's free recording. You just record your own book at LibriVox. We'll post it on their website.
There you go.
Why not?
Right? Read your own book.
Yeah. Well, as always, we thank all of you for taking the time to write in and
good comments. Thank you.
I'll take a
Babette also recommends that we watch Tourist Trap.
Oh, fuck. I've always wanted to see Tourist Trap. Great
I've never
cover.
Seen it.
Great cover.
It does have a great cover. It looks like a Salem's Lot book cover.
So we'll definitely do it, Babette. I love her.
This leads us to wrap-ups on The Last Dragon. And tonight we're beginning wrap-ups with Travis.
Oh, The Last Dragon is one of my favorite American martial arts movies from when I was
a
child.
Get the hell out of here.
I saw this movie when I was probably like 11 or 12. It's a great cover.
That is a great
Tourist
cover.
Trap is a great
Tourist
cover.
Trap
it looks really
cover.
Scary.
I want to
we're definitely
going to
do it,
Babette. Wow.
And, it's definitely, it's aged with me just because I've watched it multiple times. It's not the best martial art. I think this movie would hold up better
if the martial arts was captured a little bit better, if the character wasn't so fucking, like, you cannot, like, even, like, you could connect with a character Bruce Lee plays more than this character. He's yeah. trying to act like Bruce Lee, but he's just like, okay. At least Bruce Lee, you could understand, it was like, well, I'm a Chinese human that came to America. I feel somehow, not somehow, but I feel racially subjugated, and I got to either save my sister, blah, blah, blah. But this guy's just like, whoa, he's a fucking walking alien. It just really wears on. You can't connect with this guy. That's why his little brother is the connecting character in a weird way. Like, you connect with him. Mm. He's American. He's... I wish they would have done more. That's why I'm like, that first scene is more important. The scene where he meets the family should be earlier, because that's really important. It sets up who this character is in relation with the brother. And the, like, I think you should be introduced to the American or the Western views of this movie before the Eastern views. And you're introduced to the Eastern views before the Western views. And
just like Enter the Dragon.
Well, no, not just like Enter the fucking Dragon.
It starts off with the same kind of thing mm-hmm. between the... The very first scene is a sensei and Bruce yeah. Lee.
But it's not so fucking... But just the fact that this character is a black guy in Harlem, we need, you know, we just need some, like, what the fuck did... Was he raised by this guy? And you would think that for the first half an hour.
I did. Until, you would.
Exactly. That's confusing to this movie. And I just think that... I just think, like, this is one of those things where I really think they had a great half an hour to 40 minutes of programming here, and they had to stretch it out to, what is this?
108.
One, fucking shit, 108. Oh, my God. They just had to stretch it out because, like I said, the kidnapping thing basically had to happen twice. It had, you know, because I'm like, well, fuck, that's your ultimate right there is having her kidnapped, and then when he just rescues her, I'm like, well, what the fuck? What are we gonna do for the rest of the movie? Oh, he's gonna fall in love with her? Well, that's lame. You know, usually martial arts movies have the training in the middle, you know, to become better, to fight the bad guy. But this ends up being like, oh, I love you. I don't know how to love. I'm a fucking alien, or I'm E.T. You know, E.T. was more human than this guy. Like, E.T. spoke clear English. But like I said, the glowing hands thing, and my love of cheesy animation and spark effects, and like, and these are actually pretty good, because I mean, fucking, I don't know. I mean, it's Barry Gordy. He's got money. But if you look at like animation from like, oh God, Hellraiser was what, 88, 87?
87. Yeah,
it's really got really low bad budget, yeah. low budget oh, yeah. animation for yeah. the, and this is pretty fucking good. It's got this sparks.
Movie,
it's
this
got,
movie had a $10 million
budget. $10 million.
That's my favorite recognition. Like, it's got sparks.
Well, I just got to do it. That shit in the 80s, really, it does a lot for me. It's that whole imagination. These were the type of movies that captured your imagination more than the movie produced, just because you had special effects in there. Where nowadays we live in a world where special effects have overtaken the story. Back then, special effects just like, holy fuck, it just like created more, and it made the world somewhat more real or somewhat more in depth. Because like you know, I'm so shocked. Colin was like, the glow thing's just a. I thought you would have seen that coming from miles away. I was like, oh no, it's gonna spoil the surprise yeah. for Colin. He's well, too smart for this.
I figured
there
was gonna be a quote unquote, I don't know what I was, yeah, I should have.
The glow, because it kept saying the glow.
Fucking glow.
There's a song, it's like, the glow, the glow.
There was a song.
There's a song.
But you didn't think the movie was gonna go off into what the fuck land.
That's what's so great.
That's what I was going like, all right, so he's gonna glow at some point. And when they talk about specifics like the hands, versus the whole body, I'm like, somebody's glowing.
Dude, we won't see this again until we see Netflix's Iron Fist, like glowing hands for someone's awesome martial arts power. Fucking genius. But the movie itself to me is a tad boring. It doesn't offer the martial arts. It doesn't even offer the 80s music. I mean, it's fucking Motown, and it doesn't have the music I want Motown. It's like, oh, even though there's, I didn't even hear Stevie Wonder. He's in the credits of a song. Yeah, I'm like, where was that song?
It's the new Motown.
It's the one that sounded like Michael Jackson.
It's in the dojo when he's talking to Johnny. It's in the background. Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Like source music.
So I wish there was better music, because I'm just surprised that, like, fucking shit, dude. Like, Quentin Tarantino should have done the music for this movie. He would have found all this, you know. across 108th Street, you know, shit like that.
But good Motown, you're saying. '70s Motown.
Yeah, yeah.
When Motown was
That might have been Capitol. I'm not sure. But, yeah, what you got to know for Black, yeah, there's the two big ones is Capitol and Motown. Mm. But, I don't, the kid in me is like, yay, this movie. And even, I do think it's a great movie if you want to sit around and laugh with your buddies, because it does have that. If you're interested in martial arts movies, it's enough of a parody to, you know, to get you through it, to really, you know, I just hate the fucking love story, but it's the 80s. I guess they got nothing else to go on. Plus, how can you, you can't have somebody go to a trainer when they're like, well, you're a master. He's supposed to realize he's a master by the end of the movie. So it negates what usually makes a martial arts movie last, is the training montage, becoming a better martial artist. So I do at least recommend it because it's just, it's fun. It's just fun. Like, that's hard to come by in a lot of movies, especially martial arts movies. I wish the martial arts was better, but once again, it's the fucking 80s. Any of these early 80s, mid 80s, I mean, martial arts was so fucking new that, you know, the movies just reflect it. You know, so yeah, it's definitely a dated movie. Yeah.
Well,
the style, but it's nice to see a movie with color. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see. I wish the bad guy was better. Like I said about the whole, when you make your bad guy meek and pathetic, there's nowhere to go from there. You know, you want him to achieve, show enough, like supply the aggressiveness, but you want your bad guy to be.
I mean, he shot a dude in the teeth.
But, you know, but it's blaxploitation. They're trying to show, well, this white guy has power just because he has money. It's not that he's an aggressive dude. But just watching a movie, I want my guy. That's why I've always, when we were talking about Masters of the Universe and the versus the cartoon, I hated the cartoon because Cobra Commander and Skeletor are always such pussies. But at least in the movies.
Cobra Commander?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying G.I. Joe, you know, I'm just saying those type of 80s villains that were always these bumbling fools like Shredder, Cobra Commander.
Yeah, no.
It was always better in the movies when they actually did have ability to fight the villain or the hero. You want them to have some ability. They need to be a challenge. If they're just these pathetic goofus, then it's like, I don't get why this is so hard to begin with. You know, they obviously can't do anything. They're surrounding themselves with the most cartoony people in the world. The point where I'm surprised they're not sound effects like boink or something like that. But at least I recommend the movie.
All right. The Last Dragon. I mean, I've seen enough martial arts movies, the grindhouse ones, which are, you know, it always seems like, yeah, it's dude leaving the dojo at the beginning of the movie. He has to go on a journey somewhere off into whatever the country, you know, in China,
the country.
And then runs afoul of something that proves his mettle or whatever. This was more entertaining to me than that. It's interesting that, you know, like, what? I mean,
sorry.
No, it was more entertaining than most of the
Drunken Masters. Brilliant. Sorry.
Well, yeah, but there are ones that like rise above, right? Mm. But I mean, there's a lot of fucking martial arts movies. Thanks to Shout Factory. Okay, so maybe give you some context.
Are we blaming them here?
So Shout Factory has put out like these discs where they have like four fucking, or was it eight movies on a set, like two DVDs, you know, and I fucking sat there at one point. I can say where, but I was able to just like throw this on in the background and watch a holy bunch shit of these movies. And there was like, holy fuck, they're all exactly the same, yeah, like exactly the same plot line. And so they just kind of do become like, you know, this cookie cutter kind of thing. I mean, even the Bruce Lee, the Chinese Bruce Lee movies are,
oh yeah,
are kind of like that. Mm-hmm. And then you get Enter the Dragon, and it's like all of a sudden step.
But that's because America, you know, it had American backers, oh, yeah, with story.
Yeah,
and all that.
Yeah,
it
they had American writers on it, so you like, ooh, this is a movie. You
but
know?
That's, well, once again, that's how people learn. You know, they learn from our movies. Now, when you watch martial arts movies, they learn from how to write. You know,
yeah,
American movies or.
So I'm just saying, like in like as a martial, if you're coming at it from the martial arts end of it. It's like the guy, you know, the actors in there and all the stunt people are capable martial artists. Mm-hmm. So it functions as a martial arts movie, but it's better than like most of the grindhouse movies that I guess it's celebrating, you know, as a, it's just a really odd thing. So it's not like it does have some moments of what the fuck that are entertaining. You know, I mean, the fashion, for those of you who didn't live through the 80s, is a thing to behold. Very colorful. Very, like, what in the hell? Elaborate. Like, you can attach, like, as an earring, the reflector off of a bicycle, you know, and that's cool. Or you can put a piece of plastic, hard plastic, in your hair and clip it in there.
It's like pop art became wearable.
Yeah. Basically. I remember at the time, like, everybody kept saying, like, 80s fashions are futuristic. And now we look at them like it's quaint because, like, what in the holy fuck? But
they have color.
Really, nothing like that.
That was everybody's thought of the future. It's like, look at everybody, like, 30 years before. Look at everybody's thoughts of the future. It's like, yeah, you could just wear shit in your hair. You just go put it on your head. It's fine.
Put on sunglasses as one visor. So you look like Johnny LaForge. Yeah, it was so awesome.
But they had so many designs.
What happened?
Stuff. Yeah, I know.
We suck now.
You went from, like, we had craziness of Mad Max. Right?
Yeah.
Through, I guess, the fucking Last Dragon, you know? I mean, like,
Matrix and the Crow, like, let's get rid of color and society altogether.
That was the 90s, and
it's still happening, though.
The heroin chic.
Heroin chic. Fuck yeah, heroin chic. Alice in Chains,
The gloom.
Gloom cookies.
Gloom cookies. Yeah.
Gloom cookies.
So it's all black.
I love that name.
Black but gothic. I mean, dark. I guess it's instead of the cape, we have
the trench coat. Yeah. Gloom cookies.
Cookies.
For a movie that was produced by Motown, I mean, I can see why they were heading out. Based on the music in this movie, because it's fucking terrible.
Terrible.
I mean, like, across the board, like, I like 80s music. I like synth pop stuff from the 80s, you know, you go back to. And this, I'm listening to it just like, oh, God, this is fucking terrible. Except for maybe the DeBarge song, which, you know, you've heard so many times. This is a catchy thing. Diane Warren, I like some of the stuff that she's done. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, wasn't she Total Eclipse of the Heart? Is that Diane Warren?
No.
I think. No?
No. Well, Nikki French did the remake. That was
no, but the writer.
We'll have to get back to you.
Okay,
Bonnie
something.
Bonnie
she
Tyler?
Sings it.
Bonnie Tyler. She didn't write it.
I don't know.
I thought she wrote it too.
It's up to you, readers. Let us know.
Yeah,
readers. Readers.
But the music is fucking terrible. Terrible. And so that's like, since a lot of the music is, and this is the thing.
It's focused
too,
on.
Specific.
I think that it comes from the MTV explosion that took place at that time. It's like, now we're going to put, you know, we're going to have a movie. It's going to be a musical, but you don't actually have to break it down into musical numbers. It's choreographed, but they're fight scenes. Right? You have martial arts choreography, so it feels kind of like a musical. There's a stage. There's the idea of, you know, I mean, it kind of feels like a West Side Story kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. But you don't actually have them breaking into song and singing to each other. Although, I guess it kind of you do in a way, because Vanity sings her song in the movie. Weird. But it has
a punishment.
Music soundtrack of songs. You just kind of hope that they were going to be better. So do I recommend it? I think it was a fun watch, but it wasn't what the fuck enough to be, like, you know, a laugh riot for its entire time, which is kind of, I guess, like the kind of kick that I'm on, where I'm like, you know, I mean, it's got fucking guy who it stars a guy who can't act. It has a guy playing Shonuff. Who fucking awesome, who can act, who steals the goddamn movie.
Yeah.
And it has fucking climax that ends with guys punching each other with light and sparks.
Yes.
Which, I don't know how I didn't see that coming, but who could have expected a movie where you punch a guy and, like, he explodes? So, like I said, what the fuck? Maybe not what the fuck enough to be super awesome, but definitely enough to merit a watch. And so that's The Last Dragon.
Woo! I think I found this movie highly enjoyable.
I was high.
I mean, hey, there you go. I think for most of this movie, it was, like Colin said, it's not the laugh riot. Maybe it kind of should have been, like, kind of rides that line. It is very funny at moments. Like, I found myself laughing at it, especially the Johnny U stuff. It all came down to, like, the little character moments for me, like, really sold me on this movie. I like the Johnny U stuff. Ernie Reyes Jr. being, you know, 2 years old, coming in there, kicking everybody's ass. That was fun. Shownuff is amazing. He's very tall. He's very tall. Did I mention that? He's very, very tall.
Plus, he's got the man, the Shogun man.
I thought he was fighting Snoop Dogg for most of this movie.
That we thought Tupac was like a backup dancer or something?
It did look like Tupac.
There's a guy who looked like Tupac, in the Seventh Heaven.
When they mentioned the glowing, I'm like, somebody's gonna fucking glow, and I was kind of that's what I was waiting for, but I like that. I like that it went there. Like that's what I wanted. Fucking The Last Dragon. It could have been. I think it could have been. This movie was like an hour 49, hour 50. They probably could have shortened it up in certain parts, but like, I also have the benefit of not having seen as many kung fu movies as Colin or Travis, so I have less to judge it against, which makes this movie more entertaining for me. I laughed, I cried, I wanted to kick people. I give it 3.5 tiny Ernie Reyes Juniors out of 5 tiny Ernie Reyes Juniors. I recommend it. There,
bravo, sir.
I recommend it.
I like that. Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon. This movie fucking shaped my childhood.
Whoa. Were you kicking people? Don't
kick people. This movie introduced me to Kung Fu in a wonderful, wonderful way. I love the execution of this movie just because it's written by a guy who worked on Broadway. So when he wrote this movie, he had a musical in mind. He wanted to make a kung fu musical. And that's awesome in itself.
It feels like that.
It is. That's right? Exactly what it is. He wanted to make a kung fu musical. And with the genius of his girlfriend at the time, who I'm not sure who that is, but she said, "You're an idiot. This is a movie." And I love her for that. That's brilliant. And then you got Barry Gordy coming and putting his name on it. Basically, what happened there is he tried to showcase what Motown was doing to fit into the musical movement of the 80s, and it backfired.
It shut down Motown.
That's what happened. Yeah. He's like, "Hey,
this music
Motown's
sucks.
Still here. Let's feature some of our artists for Motown." And they all sucked, unfortunately, for Barry Gordy. However, for the rest of the movie, it's just perfection to me. I love it so much. The acting from our lead character, Bruce Leroy, Timok, not so great. But not so great. But it was his first attempt. They hired him because he was a martial artist. Like, I'm okay with that.
And he's in the Mortal Kombat Legacy.
He is in the Mortal Kombat Legacy.
Web. I gotta see
it. Is he?
Yeah. He trained with Ryan Van Cleef, and he knows sure his stuff masked. As far as martial arts.
Sub-Zero's not black.
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Shownuff. I have to talk about Shownuff because Shownuff was actually written to be more menacing and less comedic, and Jules Carey was the one, in all his brilliance, made him so outrageous that they were like, "Maybe you should pull back." He's like, no, this is Shownuff, the Shogun of Harlem. We're making a kung fu musical. This is how Shownuff is going to be.
By the way, we're all black, so I'm going to... His name is Shownuff.
Yes. Brilliant. So I just loved the whole execution of Shownuff. I think he's one of my favorite characters ever. And then you tie it all together with the animated spark chops and kicks at the end. I mean, it's perfect. I love this movie.
He pulls Shownuff out of the water. He doesn't want him to drown.
No.
He pulls him out.
He pulls him out because he is still a master. He's still the master. You know what? Violence isn't everything.
It's not, Colin.
I want to tell you how disappointed I was that at the end of it, it's like, "And I have discovered that I am the master." I'm like, "The Last Dragon, right?" Okay, whatever.
Well, he's already the Last Dragon.
He achieved but that, but the
that
master.
Line, that he line did. Was so great, though. That line when he pulls him out and he's like, "Who's the master?" And he's like, "I am." And it's like, "Yeah, boy."
He did like hoist Eddie Arcadia like up on the chain for like 5 minutes. Like from start to finish, it was probably like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it took forever.
It took forever. And the cops had to come and like let him down for that 5 minutes. Cut some time.
That was a prop error.
The Last Dragon. It's in the song.
Yeah,
you don't need the character to say the titular line.
He is the Last Dragon.
Titular.
Yeah, there was supposed to be a sequel. Never happened.
There's some
heartfelt people that are still hoping it'll happen.
Holy fuck!
There was rumors that it might happen this year.
No,
but
no, I don't even want to see that.
No,
oh, you do.
I would see it.
Last Dragon.
I'd see it too.
Two thumbs up, everyone. Yes,
I give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, I think you should see it.
3.5 tiny.
If you're listening to this show, you should probably watch this movie.
Yeah, probably.
Four votes for yes.
There you go. All right, so it's
freak show.
That's right. So it's The Last Dragon, and next week we're going to be watching my pick. So we're going to be watching a movie called Sorceress from 1982. Oh. I've talked about this before. It's written by Jim Wynorski.
Jim Wynorski.
And it stars on the freak show. Pair of Playboy playmates, and it's fucking awesome. It's not the Barbie twins.
We'll
it's like
see.
The something else.
Yes,
twins. Yes. Well, awesomely bad. It's so bad, it's awesome.
Crazy.
Let's put it that way. So that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is going dark.